Hello, this is Tamiko Faison, your host for Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast dedicated to showcasing and supporting therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color around the world. Back again. Y'all probably saying, wow, you are doing a lot of podcasts, and that I am, because I am very fortunate to have several of our AOTA candidates willing to share with us. And so today we have Natalie Chang Wright. She is a dedicated leader with over three decades of experience in occupational therapy, showcasing proven expertise in leadership and strategic management. Holding an MBA in healthcare management and being a certified occupational therapy assistant and leader, she has been honored with several military ribbons and awards, and with AOTA's highest awards, including the Roster of Honor and AOTA Award of Excellence. Throughout her career, she has excelled in initiating and developing diverse programs, ensuring compliance, and champion equity and inclusion values. With roles such as clinician, OTA program director in chair, team leader, and clinical director of operations, she has demonstrated proficiency in program development, leadership, and collaboration with healthcare and educational institutions. With a diverse skill set encompassing leadership, strategic management, program development, compliance, and accreditation, she holds certificates related to diversity, equity, inclusion, and health coaching, and she is also involved in volunteer work. Natalie's commitment extends beyond her professional roles, as evidenced by her leadership appointments in organizations like the American Occupational Therapy Association and Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority. She currently serves as the chairman for the DEI committee and the advocate for social justice committee, respectively. Engaged in advocacy and mission alignment, Natalie actively contributes to various initiatives and joyfully serves communities where she engages in work, rest, and play. As she should. Y'all hear that? Work, rest, and play. Over her 30-year career as an occupational therapy assistant, Natalie embraced leadership as more than just a title. Rather, it's an action rooted in service, confidence, and empowering collective spirit. Natalie's leadership philosophy aligns with servant leadership, prioritizing service to create an environment where teams thrive. In occupational therapy, leadership involves influencing positive change through advocacy, policy development, program creation, education, and research. Great leaders embody mentorship, integrity, and commitment to continuous growth for themselves and others. Ultimately, leadership is about service and making a meaningful impact beyond holding a position of authority. Mic drop on that one. Welcome to the show, Natalie.
Thank you, Tamiko. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Very happy to have you here. Great bio, and resonated a lot. Servant leadership. I'm a preacher of servant leadership, that we really focus on serving others in order to be great leaders. That's how you really have true followership. But tell us, Natalie, how you got started in OT.
Well, I will say that, OT found me. It's been the only career that I've had in my adult life. And as you mentioned, it's been over three decades, and I still love this profession, the one that chose me. When I decided to join the Army many moons ago, as a teenager, actually, I thought I wanted to become a child psychologist. Obviously, this wasn't possible without a degree. So I had a collaborative conversation with my sister and the recruiter. And my sister, she was also a veteran, and one of her best buds helped me to choose occupational therapy. There are several reasons why I thought it was a good idea. They thought it was a good idea. Is one, I'd have the opportunity to work in psychosocial settings, and then also have the opportunity to work with children, which both resonated with what I wanted to do at that time. But the bonus was that once I decided to leave active duty, I'd be able to work as an OTA in the civilian sector with the credentials that I earned. Back then, they had a certificate program through the Army, and then you were eligible to take the certification exam. So I spent 6 years in active duty, working in just about every setting, had the opportunity to work in psych, had the opportunity to work in PEDS. But what they didn't tell me when I was, looking through and selecting jobs was that I would actually end up loving physical disabilities much more than PEDS. Over the years, I've had the opportunity to advance my education, although each iteration brought the question, should I become an occupational therapist? Like, should I transition from being an OTA to being an OT? And each time, for various reasons, the answer was no, like move in a different direction that can help to advance my career as a leader, while giving myself opportunities for growth in new and different areas. So I don't have any regrets about any of my career decisions, especially becoming an occupational therapy assistant and remaining one.
So you got introduced to OT in the military. Thank you for your service. As we're talking about servant leadership, thank you for your service to our country.
My pleasure.
And then you decided not to become an OT, but you pursued other educational opportunities. What made you decide to become to get your MBA?
So, I was actually at a crossroads, and I know we're going to get into this a little bit later. But I had attained my bachelor's degree and was trying very hard to be placed in a leadership position. And each time I was met with some barrier or some challenge, whether it was made up or it was, actually real. And so I decided to advance my degree. I knew I wanted to get a master's degree. And I was actually debating to, they had a bridging program at Texas Women's University that I thought about engaging in. But a colleague of mine was also in an MBA program with a concentration in healthcare management, and he was telling me about it. And so I decided to do some exploration. So then it became MHA, MBA, or MOT. I took my daughter to the hospital where I worked. I think I was picking up something. And we were walking down the hallway, and most healthcare facilities have that wall of fame. And she's looking at the pictures, and she's like, "Mom, how come your picture isn't up there?" She's like, "How come your picture isn't up there?" And I said, "Well, because those are the, the leaders of the hospital." And she said, "Well, aren't you the boss of the hospital?" And I thought it was so cute and so innocent. But then right there at that moment, I made my decision right there that I was going to get an MBA, because when I looked at the initials after each of their names, none of them said MOT or OTR or any of that. They all said MBA or MHA. And so I chose the MBA program for that reason and other reasons, based on the fact that I was working full time, being a mom, doing volunteer stuff. The MBA program that I attended was catered towards those with a active career and busy lifestyle.
Did you know that you wanted to be a leader before your daughter said, "Mom, you're the boss, Mama. Why are you not up here?" Did you already know that you were going to be a leader, or did it just happen in that moment that you felt like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go into leadership"?
So, truth be told, I had other leadership opportunities prior to that. So, yes, I was already a leader in different ways. But I have a personal goal, which is to improve the lives of others. And whenever I really sit and think about it, I try to find opportunities to make that exponential. And so I thought that having an MBA and actually like being a healthcare administrator would actually position me to be able to improve the lives of plenty others, right? So at that point, it was primarily patients that I worked with, students that I supervised, and then different opportunities here and there. Like in the military, they send you to, if you're in long enough and you are ambitious, They send you to leadership development courses. That is experiential, you know, learning the military skills and learning how to lead others effectively. So while I was in the military, even though I was young, I was a non-commissioned officer. And so I supervised service members in my department. So I already had leadership engagement, leadership skills, leadership training. And then in my family, my nuclear family, growing up, we all had different responsibilities. Funny enough, I was the youngest of my parents' union, and my sisters were all considered my leaders. But so I learned from them, and there were different opportunities when I had younger cousins or such coming over to help lead and guide. So I think it's always been a part of who I am, watching my parents in their respective professions, watching my sisters and my brothers, who are all bosses in their own right. So yeah, the Chan gang is, we're bosses.
Thank you for sharing that perspective, because, you know, many times we think of leadership, and I'm guilty of doing this myself, even though I preach that leadership can be formal and informal, but the way you just explained your leadership roles is just a good way. It's a good example of how we have leadership skills in a variety of roles. So you explain, like, as a sister, you know, in the military with students. So if you're listening to this and you don't see yourself as a leader, really reflect on what she just shared and think about some of those roles that you're in where you might not have a formal title as a leader, but you are certainly using leadership skills. Now, thinking about leadership, talk to us about your leadership journey. Where is that? Where is going?
So I have, I love quotes. So I have a couple of quotes that I'm going to plug in here and there. So one of the ones I love is, it says, a good leader was once a good follower. And I remember growing up, and my mom would always tell me, I was a follower, which I had to be. I had older sisters. And that I should learn to be a leader. And so it took a lot of trial and error as a teenager to figure that out, to figure out that space between not being so much of a follower. And if I'm going to follow the good. And I didn't learn that follow the good lesson. Actually, that terminology never even came out of my mouth until I had my own children and noticed that one of them had some following tendencies. And, you know, I shared with her my experience as a child, and that, you know, it's okay. Not everybody is born to be a leader. Not, you know, if we have a ship with all captains, the ship is not really going much. It's not really going anywhere because that's too much ego. what do you say? My mom would say, too many cooks spoil the broth. So, you know, there's a fine line there. But so I believe even in leadership, you should also be a follower, because if you're a leader, that means that you are working with a team of individuals, and a good leader wants to see those who aren't in leadership position, but they possess the capacity, or maybe you help them to discover the capacity within. You want them to be able to lead. And in many instances, good leaders actually don't mind if those that they supervise actually surpass them. But that's leaders who aren't primarily driven by their ego. So throughout my career, as I mentioned, I've, you know, held a variety of leadership roles. My most recent position I worked at a university, Kaiser University, as the OTA program director. I worked with a team of faculty, and we developed and implemented a variety of comprehensive curriculum for the OTA program. And Kaiser is slightly unique. There's 20 plus campuses across the state of Florida, and 11 of those campuses have an OTA program. And so I was a course team leader for a phys discourse. And so there were many faculty that I worked with. And I gladly led that team because it's something that I just really enjoyed doing. So like that's an example to me of the adage of bloom where you planted. Although it did not add coins in my bank account, nor did it add anything to my position in terms of a title per se. It added value in terms of learning how to map out a curriculum, learning how to work with individuals near and far, you know, being able to collaborate on that level in education and academia, and then produce something successful has been one of my greatest joys. Also working on collaborating with community partners. I'm not necessarily what you might consider a people person, although I work with people. I love working with people. I should rephrase that. Maybe we'll take that part out. I am an introvert by nature. And so working with people sometimes can be a challenge for me, not for them, a challenge for me. But if you put a goal in front of me, I that is out the window completely. So I have worked in the military environment as both an active duty service member as well as a civilian. And so I've had the opportunity to provide leadership and guidance and mentorship to a variety of people with various situations going on in their life and in different segments. Because even in my role as an OTA, I find opportunities, or they find me, to lead and guide patients in their care, you know. So as you mentioned, you know, students and maybe newer young practitioners, or those who feel like they don't have leadership to offer, you offer it every day in what you're doing. Again, if you're not chasing a title, rather the experience, then you'll find ways to embrace and unleash your power as being a leader. The first big title that I had, I think, was working as a clinical director of operations for a subcontracting therapy company. I had a large team of OT practitioners, PT practitioners, speech, the whole shebang. And that was my first opportunity outside of the military where I actually had a leadership title where I, you know, helped with operations and guiding the daily responsibilities of building a team and building a company and creating financial opportunities for the company to grow. That was quite meaningful in my development as the leader I am now. And I was doing that while I was obtaining my MBA. So I think I have to give a lot of credit to my military experience because, well, I'll say my family experience, that was a foundation, and then expanding that foundation to my military experience. And although some people say, well, gosh, when's the last time you were in the Army? It was a long time ago, a long, long time ago. However, it was such an impactful experience that it has stayed with me, the principles that I've learned, the things to do and the things not to do, because both are equal for learning and growth. That I always mention it because I have to. Currently, as you mentioned, I serve as the chairperson for the AOTA's Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, Justice, Access, and Belonging Committee. We just added the Justice, Access, and Belonging with the newly created department within AOTA. And then I serve as the chairperson for the Advocate for Social Justice Committee. And both of those opportunities, someone told me about it. There weren't necessarily opportunities that I was seeking, but I think it's important to also have a support system that is actually supportive Because sometimes there are opportunities that you aren't exploring that someone may know of or hear about. And if you're the first person that comes to mind, then that's a great thing. That means you've demonstrated proficiency and confidence and the ability to do the job or the tasks that they have presented to you as an opportunity. So take every opportunity that you actually have the bandwidth to engage in, because that is also important, because otherwise then you'll experience burnout, and a burnt out leader can be effective, but not as much as if they are rested and have, you know, cooler minds to prevail and help them in decision making.
I hear you, Natalie. I'm trying. No, but seriously, I hear what you're saying. You definitely have to take care of yourself. And I think it's something that, you know, a lot of the guests that I talk with, it can be challenging, you know, particularly as a person of color who has, you know, more challenges than people who may not be of color. So, I do want to switch gears and talk about that for a minute, but I also want to say I am an introvert. I am a like very strong introvert. So I can relate to what you were saying about how that can be difficult sometimes. I have a big personality, I feel like, but I'm introverted. And so it drains me when I'm around people like all day long. I'm tired. It's not that I don't want to be around people. It's just, it makes me tired. And when I'm by myself, I have a lot of energy and I'm very productive. I get a lot of things done. And so it's great to have leaders with different types of experiences and for you to share, because sometimes people also think if you're a leader, you must be this person who's very extroverted and loves to be out and amongst folk all the time. Not the case. You can still be a very effective leader who has an introverted personality.
Absolutely. And I read an article. Oh, it's been a while. That actually, they've done research and showed that introverts make better leaders than extroverts.
I need to read it. I need to read that article.
I will find it and I will send it. I'll share it with you.
Okay. Challenges. We were talking about burnout, challenges that people of color have as leaders. What challenges have you had and how have you overcome those challenges?
Well, that is a great question. there have been some challenges, you know, as a person of color. I think a lot of people of color, a lot of people in this profession, a lot of OTAs have faced lots of challenges related to representation and inclusivity or lack thereof. I believe, you know, in this profession, I remember I remember attending an AOTA board meeting, and we had a special guest. Her name was Dr. Patty Rose. She was quite a dynamic speaker. And she repeated over and over that our profession comprises of 85% white women. Like in her, she talked to us for about an hour. And she kept repeating that over and over and over to the point where I can almost still hear her voice. Why does she do that? After 117 years as a profession, after 50 years of the establishment of the National Black OT Caucus, many decades of development of different MDI groups, our profession hasn't evolved beyond a mere 4-6% of Black people. Out of 250,000 OTs and OTAs, Black people represent 4-6%. So we have a long way to go. A long way to go. I think some of the things that have been challenging are some of the barriers to leadership positions, which is a double whammy with me being an ambitious OTA. There's been lack of mentorship opportunities, especially persons of color. where it can be even challenging to the point of asking for help. And with being an introvert and also having a leadership mindset, you know, there's often times where I say, I could do this on my own. You know, I have knowledge, I have confidence. I can figure this thing out. But the truth of the matter is I could have never gotten to where I am in my personal or professional journey without the help of others by way of mentorship, especially. We need representation of BIPOC individuals in our profession. There's just no other way. We have to have representation. We have to have leadership that looks like me, not just the color of my skin or the texture of my hair, but also the position that I chose to remain in this profession as an OTA. Some people have the misconception that OTAs cannot or maybe should not be in leadership positions, and you know, it's poppycock. it is. I'm sorry. Sometimes when I think of it, it just makes me sad. But I'm also a hopeful person, right? So I think we have to consider the lack of racial diversity, racism, oppression, micro, macroaggressions, imposter syndrome, all of those things, which, you know, unfortunately, those things can create health challenges, which I myself have experienced. Mm. I'm not unique in terms of, you know, having health challenges or experiencing some of the health disparities in the medical field. It's quite common. You know, I've read a ton of articles that talk about patients feeling diminished or being dismissed when they're seeking care. And one of the reasons is because those who are treating them have no familiarity with their lived experiences. And so it becomes challenging. You know, it also becomes challenging to be able to find opportunities or receive opportunities to advance. the healthcare sector is lacking not just leadership opportunities, but also mentorship opportunities, which is essential for growth. To become an authentic and inclusive leader, we have to have BIPOC representation. And in the field of occupational therapy, that also includes OTAs. I do have to give props to, you know, COTAD and other diverse OT groups for leading the charge and trying their best to make a change. I shouldn't even say trying, because Yoda says there's no try, there's only do. They have been doing this thing, you know, for a while. Yeah. And, you know, while they have great opportunities for leadership development and mentorship, I do have some concern that OTAs still aren't necessarily represented in these groups. How, you know, based on the things that I see, granted, it doesn't say OTAs aren't welcome, but when we use language like we're referring to all practitioners as occupational therapists, some OTAs feel as if then you're not talking about me because I am an occupational therapy assistant. So we have to be intentional with the language that we use and say occupational therapy assistant, OTA, occupational therapy practitioner, right? And that will help people to have a better understanding of, okay, yes, you're also including me. Because, you know, someone challenged me once and said, well, that's not what I mean. Why would you think that? And I said, well, if I was to misrepresent myself and say to someone that I am an occupational therapist, how would you feel? You would feel like you shouldn't do that. You're not a therapist. You're an assistant. Da, 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 da. So, you know, if I am not going to misrepresent myself, then I want you to represent me by referring to my title as it is. I am an occupational therapy assistant. Actually, I'm a certified occupational therapy assistant.
Yes. Yes. You talked a lot about challenges, and we certainly have a lot of them. Like you said, you're hopeful, and we do have a ways to go. You are leading in many ways in those efforts. And I feel like you've shared some about, you know, advice. You talked about opportunities, being open to opportunities and leaning into those. You also talked about mentorship. So now I want, as we, you know, wrap up, want to talk about what is next for you and how can the audience support you in your leadership roles?
Oh, well, you know, honestly, I am currently at a stage of discovery in my life. Okay. I took a bold and brave move with the support of my husband and my children and my close friends, and I decided to take a break from paid work. I've been on a sabbatical of sort, or as Sherry, the previous AOTA executive director, framed it when she was moving on from AOTA, as preferment, which it's not retirement, it's not unemployment, it's a stage where I'm taking a good look at who I am, where I've been, and where I plan to go. Like, what do I prefer to do, you know, over the next 5, 10, 15 years of my life? I mean, I might decide to retire. I might decide to, you know, go back into the workforce. But one thing I will always be is serving and leading and serving some more. Some people might think this is glorious. Like, oh my gosh, she had the ability to take time off. But I will say it's been a challenge. Like, I've been working since I was 17 years old. And work is a part of my DNA, you know. So when the optimum time and the opportunity presents itself, I'll be back in the swing of things, in the rank of the gainfully employed, or the happy volunteering, you know, in various spaces. In terms of my future goals, I'm aspiring to leverage my existence, leverage my extensive experience, excuse me. Yeah, I guess I should leverage my existence too. in advance in occupational therapy. One of the things that I like about what I'm doing with the DEI committee is we are advancing the profession. There's a lot of things that we have managed to accomplish over the past, 2-3 years as an inaugural committee. And I would love to see that momentum continue. I'm staying engaged in the profession, and I'm currently pursuing a degree in industrial and organizational psychology. I do have a huge goal as becoming the AOTA next vice president. So if you all want to support me, cast your ballot and select me, Natalie Chang Wright. True story. Should I win the ballot? Should I win the position as vice president? It will be the first time that an OTA would be in a position such as this.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Opportunity to make history in a lot of different ways. So you heard Natalie's story. I mean, it's not even a question of whether or not she is a leader. She is like a born leader, formal and informal leadership positions. And even in her preferment, which I gotta start using that word. I might go into a preferment, y'all. If y'all see me disappear for a little bit, I might be in a preferment thinking about next steps. But even in your preferment, you're still serving. Like going back to what we talked about in the very beginning in your bio, that you are a servant leader. So even in your preferment, you're leading as a servant leader, and that is appreciated. So audience, please vote. Please listen to the candidates on whatever forms they're on, platforms, learn about them, and make an informed decision when you vote. And so I am very grateful for Natalie. Glad I got to learn a little bit more about what you do, and will continue to support you, and looking forward to whatever else is next based on your preferment decisions.
I do have one big ask, and that is for the listening audience to keep an open mind and watchful eyes for burgeoning OTAs who might not know what they should ask or how they should ask to help to develop professionally. Help me raise awareness of the exclusionary practices that are experienced by OTAs as well as people of color, and in whatever way you can help to make a change. That would be ultimate, whether I'm vice president of AOTA or not. Like, that is the ultimate goal, is inclusion for historically marginalized groups of people. It's time. It's been time. Let's go get it. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's do it. All right. That is our show. Thank you again, Natalie, for taking some time out of your preferment to chat with us. I'm going to wear that word out now. but again, we do appreciate you, listeners. Please, please vote and please use your voice and your position to help make a change and a difference with OTAs, as Natalie mentioned, that sometimes we don't always think about the fact that you may be unintentionally excluding OTAs. And so do what you can to lift up other OTAs and to make a difference so that everyone in our profession feels included. Don't forget to follow us. That is our show. Until next time, thank you.
Thank you.